This episode and the entire run of the Simpsons One-Shot series is completely listener-funded through Patreon. We've just revamped our Patreon page and are offering more than ever to listeners, including exclusive series just for Patreon supporters. So if you want to learn how to help support this series and everything we do at NewsAz, check out our rebooted campaign at patreon.com/newsaz. Welcome to the Simpsons One Shot Show. This is the show where we go through the Simpsons Bongo Comics one shots, one issue at a time, for each month of 2017. I am Matt, and joining me this episode are my usual co-hosts, Karen.
Hello.
And Derek.
Hello, everybody.
And today, we are talking about Bart Simpson's pal, Milhouse, the one shot dedicated entirely to Milhouse. So this one, again, has multiple stories. This one actually has two main stories and three, not one-pagers, but like two or three-pagers. Real short to the short stories. They're called The Imaginarium of Milhouse Van Houten, Milhouse's Best Day, Milhouse Van Houten is Octoweenie, Matters with Milhouse, and Milhouse in Feats of Fury. And we'll start off like we usually do with the cover. I couldn't find any variants of this. Did you, Derek, or is this the only
cover? No, I don't believe there were any.
Okay, so this is the only cover, and I have it in my hands right now. And it's Milhouse hanging from his underwear, from the flagpole, it's presumably outside of school, reading Second Banana Comics. And now I'm starting to see a theme in our coverage here. There's another banana reference. And there's like a bolt of lightning coming down behind him, and it splits between that and the phone pole, it splits the cover in four. And in the top left hand corner is Milhouse in a suit and jacket running from an airplane, screaming on his cell phone, which is an homage to something, but I have no idea what. That's to a movie, but I don't know what. And it's a black and white movie, and I can picture the still from it, but I don't know what it is. I even want to say it's a Jimmy Stewart movie, but that might not be right. Do you guys have any idea?
I have seen that clip a million times, and I couldn't tell you what it is.
Okay, by the time we release this, I'll find the image I'm talking about, put these side by side, and then get that answer. So there's probably people screaming that no films screaming at their iPods right now, but I'm sorry, I don't know it. In the upper right-hand corner, this has got to be like a general Conan the Barbarian reference. He's got long hair. He's in a long loincloth. There's a kind of almost Xena-looking character, but not, it's not Xena, laying by his side. They're on a bed of, or a mountain of skulls. He's raising a battle axe in the air. He's got a very mean look on his face, and his glasses, of course. He's got his glasses. Bottom left-hand corner, we're looking at a shootout in the Wild West. Milhouse is at the end of the street. He's the white hat, so he's the good guy. He's getting ready to draw, and we're looking through this through actually a pretty interesting angle. We're looking through it between the hand that's hovering over his adversary's gun. So we're kind of peeking behind, we're like behind the guy he's dueling with. And then in the bottom right-hand corner, there's a giant Milhouse kind of almost anime robot with lasers shooting out of his fingertips, and Milhouse up on his shoulder with a remote control. Want to note, none of this happens in the comics.
The top left corner is North by Northwest.
Ah, okay. Yes, I wouldn't have guessed that if you put a gun to my head.
No, thank God for Google.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that the Second Banana comic book is looking like it's Jughead.
Jughead.
Oh, yeah.
which is the Milhouse of the Archie universe.
Yes. Yep.
You know, Jughead was Archie's Second Banana. Milhouse is clearly Bart's Second Banana.
Yep. Yep. You're right. Here's the funny part to me. This is a weird pop culture reference, but at first glance, I thought the Mac Moon. Remember him?
Oh, God.
The McDonald's Moon. I'm sorry. McDonald's Moon.
Yeah. Mac the Knife.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Now, that's the front cover. You turn it over. Then there's the back cover. This thing. If they had this in poster size when Simpsons was in its heyday, this would have been on my wall. This is a painted cover. It's a continuation of the barbarian theme, but it's Milhouse with a battle axe and a sword taking on a skeleton soldier of some sort. It looks like he's wearing the Dragon's Lair guy's costume.
Yeah, I was thinking the same exact thing.
It's funny. And up on a cliff above is like this sorceress with this in this red dress, low cut dress, devil horns on her head. She has two wolves by her side. She's raising a scepter in the air. There's a red moon and a even bigger black moon behind him. He's jumping in the air. There's a cowering wolf. There's a shadow of another soldier, an orc behind him, an orc coming up from the right. And all of this is in a big cloud that leads to two dots down inside of Milhouse's head as he's laying in bed holding his little puppy. I love this cover. This should have been the front cover.
This looks like one of those paintings that would have been on the side of a van. Yeah, in the right? 80s.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yep. Yeah, I mean, I have to, I don't know what the story is behind doing this as opposed to the front cover. It's like, I don't know if they put out, this is, here's the image we want to convey on the cover to multiple artists, and this was another one that was brought in that was so good that they put it on the back, or maybe they even planned to put it on the back. Whatever the reason, I'm glad it's there, because it is. I love that picture. That is a really cool picture for Milhouse, of all things. That's what makes it good. If it was anybody else, it'd just be one of those general wizard world fantasy images, but you put Milhouse in the middle and it makes it awesome. Or not.
None of that happens in the story.
No, none of this happens in the story. In fact, let's get right to it. Let's get right to the story. The first story, The Imaginarium of Milhouse Van Houten, script by Pat McGrail, pencils by John Delaney, inks by Andrew Pepoy, and colors by Nathan Howell. That's the name. Apparently, we're going to say a lot in this, so that's pretty. I'm still saying that's cool. Two episodes later, I'm still saying that's cool to see Nathan Howell involved in this. So we start off with Milhouse as a huge, with a huge buff body and a teeny, teeny little head.
Well, it's the opposite of what he is.
I guess, yeah.
He's got a big, giant head and a teeny, tiny body.
That's a good point, yeah. But that is a great, just, the imagery is awesome. He's in the middle of a gladiatorial arena. And what looks like at first, I thought he's like facing off with an imaginary Mo. Because
it's going to look like Mo.
Yeah, the person directly across from him, from Mo, but then it looks like Mo, but then we find out it's actually his imagination of, which is weird, is Mrs. Krabappel, because it's clearly a guy in the second panel, but then we get the juxtaposition of reality and we see him and it's Mrs. Krabappel. So I guess he's there's no reason he can't imagine her as a guy, but it's Mrs. Krabappel that he's facing off with in his imagination. And it's in the midst of her teaching about ancient Rome. So that's what has triggered his memory. So at this point, Milhouse is basically chastised for using his memory. First, a little bit by Mrs. Krabappel, but then he's like guilted about it even more by Bart. Bart is, I guess at this point, not yet. We're getting to it. So Bart is not happy with him with him being his second banana, as we just discussed, is not happy with him embarrassing himself in class. Class is over. They start walking home. In the middle of lamenting about not being able to control his imagination kicks in and he envisions him and Bart in the middle of the jungle on a hunt. And then they come across a bear. And I do have to point out, as I do with these technicalities, they found a bear in a tropical jungle. That shouldn't happen.
A grizzly, no less.
But that's okay, because the joke is gets funny because the bear burps and it's his imagination there outside of Mo, and that was Barney. I like that the bear burped and it was Barney. I think a good imaginary animal for Barney is a bear. I can't think of much of a better one.
Yeah, it's kind of perfect.
Yeah, so it actually works. So what actually snaps him back into reality is calling him a smelly brute, and then the bear speaks and he's back to reality. This is followed up by Homer coming out of the bar, and this is like, I think this might be the first spoken line that feels like it could be directly pulled from an episode, because he says when Milhouse apologizes for using imagination, Homer says, "Get real, Poindexter. Imagination is for losers." I mean, it was no stretch of the imagination to hear Homer's voice say that line.
Well, he calls him Poindexter in several different episodes, too.
True, yep. So now with the embarrassment in front of Mo, or building off the embarrassment at school, this embarrassment in front of Moe's, and now the bullies happen to be around, probably waiting for Barney to buy them beer or someone to buy them beer inside the bar. this is too much for Bart. He says, that's it. Last straw, their friendship's over. So meanwhile, we cut to the Quickie Mart. None of our characters that we've seen so far here. So this is kind of off in another part of town. Snake is robbing Apu. And I have to note that my note program auto-corrected Apu to app. That's the world we live in, where it doesn't recognize a proper name, but it does recognize the word app. That's kind of funny. So now this is cool. This is the first note that I wrote that I thought was a really cool thing to see in these comics, and I hope we see more of. Snake's car is the same car from the police auction episode of The Simpsons. It's like they actually went and made sure that the details were correct and kind of tied the two together. I don't know why I thought that was cool, but I thought that was cool. So as Milhouse is walking home alone, sad, he kind of starts envisioning himself as walking through like the frozen tundra, complete with dead Tauntaun in the background.
Yes.
Any Star Wars fan has to like that. Now his costume, for some reason, it's the glasses, the shielded glasses that he wears. They're rectangles with really thin rectangular slits in them. That is ringing a bell of something that I can't put my finger on. At first, I thought maybe this is like a classic vintage Mr. Freeze, but I looked that up. It's not it. Then I thought like Wrath of Khan, because he kind of has that, but it's not the same as the Wrath of Khan. Did this recognize those glasses and like that the outfit he's wearing ring any bells to anyone, or is it just my imagination with Milhouse's imagination?
No, I think it was a villain, like a Batman villain or something. But yeah, I'm definitely drawing a blank on what it is.
Okay, I thought Batman too. So it must not be. I mean, you think of Cold, I think of Mr. Freeze. So there might be another Cold-based character. I'm not the biggest Batman historian. I mean, apart from the movies and the Adam West stuff, that's about all I can pick from my memory. So there may be another Cold character. Okay, well, I'm going to put that picture up too, and hopefully someone will be able to pick that up. Because if you concur, then there's something to that. But I could not find what it was. And I actually had to get work done that day, so I had to stop researching. So
this is more important.
I know, right? Yeah. So to get out of the cold, Milhouse comes across a hatch that he climbs down into. And then after he climbs into it, we are put back into reality. And it's actually the back of Snake's car. So now, once in the back of his car, the hood is shut. The car takes off. Milhouse starts digging around in the trunk and he comes across a bag of money, which now his imagination kicks in. And now instead of being in a frozen wasteland, he is underwater and has found some sunken treasure. So he starts to make a grab at the treasure, which is the cash. And this, I wrote Snaketopus because it's an octopus with Snake's head on it, grabs him. Interesting character design on this one. It works, yeah. But it's a little creepy too. So back to reality during this struggle, we see this is all happening outside a diner, or more likely a donut shop, where Chief Wiggum and Lou are enjoying their morning donut and coffee. And this is another scene I could see play out in the show. They talk about what's going on. They relate it back to an APB. They know they should do something, but they still have one more donut and cup of coffee to get through. So once they're done that, they'll go and do this, which I could actually see that happening, where they get all excited and go, once they get to the apex of their excitement and say, after this last donut and coffee, and sit back down. That is a thing Chief Wiggum would do, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so now here's the cool part. Here's a funny part for me in this. It says 3 minutes later, they finish their last donut. Wiggum wants the glaze to settle, and we go outside and they're still struggling. So props to Milhouse for fending off Snake for 3 full minutes. That's pretty damn impressive. I don't know how he would do that. For some reason, they give the cash to Milhouse instead of taking it as evidence, but I guess that's what happens in Chief Wiggum's reign. So Milhouse takes the money back to Apu. And now I think my favorite part of this entire story, Apu says he's going to grant him a wish, and Milhouse's imagination kicks in, and Apu is a genie, basically the genie from Aladdin. I don't know why I thought that was great, maybe because of the whole India reference thing, but that's my favorite imagination clip out of all of this. So the wish is for two free squishies. He gives the second squishy to Bart to basically buy his friendship back. So Bart agrees with one condition, that he has to stick a frog in Mrs. Krabappel's desk. They cut to back to the gladiator arena. Krabappel is holding the frog up, and she knows who did it. And she said that it was, I want to get the name right. It was Sparta House. I almost said Milicus. That's not right. So Sparta House. Fellow gladiators are kids from the class. Martin, Bart, and Nelson. I almost blanked on Nelson there. Man, I'm not batting 1,000 by any means here. And they all declare that they are Sparta House. And Milhouse has a tender moment where he's finally protected by his peers. Then we jump to reality, and Bart says, oh, what the heck, it was him. And he calls out Milhouse, and that's the end. So that is the first story. And this one, I really like this. Again, maybe it's getting into the comics. I thought this was a better start than the Ralph one. I can envision Milhouse's imagination taking him down every road that we saw. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I like the story. I feel bad. He takes a beating in this story, you know, as an only child and, you know, kid with an imagination when I was a kid, you know, I understand his point of view. You know, I would try to see, you know, the adventure and things. And yeah, he just gets kicked even by his best friend. He just gets kicked the entire time. So, I mean, I thought the story itself was really good. It was just kind of sad.
Yeah. Now you mention it. Yeah. Now, see, you guys are turning my opinion on every opening story. Jeez. I don't like it. What do you think, Karen?
This one took a little getting used to because it's not something that we see from Milhouse. Like, it's believable that he has such an imagination, being an only child and being kind of an outcast that he is. So it's believable, but because we don't see it so much, it took me a minute to get into it and really accept it as a Milhouse story.
Okay.
But once I did that, I read through it again. It's definitely entertaining, but yeah, it has its points where it's like, man, that kid can't catch a break, which is very Milhouse.
That's true. And the only reason he continues going is that his imagination keeps pulling him out of reality, maybe.
Yeah.
But they still have the gladiators have such tiny heads. I'm going through to see if there's anything I missed in my notes about the snake car. That's the thing that I had to write that down. I thought that was really cool because I had actually just seen that episode on one of the many, many, many Simpsons blocks on FXX. That episode was on. Apart from that, the Homer line, I love that. Like I said, I had no trouble.
Yeah, that was definitely straight out of an episode.
Yep.
It reminds me of when they went to Flanders Beach House and they were playing Blind Date.
Oh yeah. It looks just like you, Poindexter.
You got the dud. He looks like you, Poindexter.
The snake octopus, that's a little disconcerting, but it's not freaking me out. It's not like it's a tree octopus or anything. Those are scary. Ralph Wiggum Chief Wiggum wanted finishes donuts and coffee. That I think is straight out of there as well. So yeah, I like this. I do. It is. Yeah. I mean, you guys are right. Absolutely right. It's basically a series of unfortunate events to him, and he has to use his imagination to cope or get through them. But I don't know. Maybe I'm relating with it too close, and I should probably just close that door before we get down there.
Yeah, that could get expensive.
Yeah, exactly. So okay, so, let's move on. Now we have a short one. This is just 4 pages, so a little longer than the ones we talked about in is it 4 pages, 5 pages, I'm sorry. So not as long as that story, but not as short as the Ralph Wiggum's one. Then Karen, you're taking these short stories, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. No, it is 4 pages. I'm sorry, 4 pages. Karen, I'll just stop talking if I can, which apparently I can, and let Karen talk.
You're done.
Okay. I was drinking water, but oh, wow. You had your opportunity.
Oh, my bad. So the first short is Milhouse's Best Day. It was, the script is by Cheryl Smith. Pencils and inks by Mike Gazzala. Colors by Nathan Hamill. Letters by Karen Bates. And edited by Nathan Kane. Just a comment that I think now we can start to, at least for me, can start seeing the different people's style.
Yes.
Because this is the same style as Ralph's first story, which I think was also penciled in ink by Mike Gazzala.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You're right.
So we can start seeing the different styles and the by the different artists. So Milhouse's Best Day starts with him writing in his diary, "Dear Diary, today is my birthday. Just once I wish I could spend it being cool," which is a very Milhouse entry.
Yeah.
And we see that it's Bart reading this entry while Milhouse is brushing his teeth. Kind of creepy that Bart is just hanging out in Milhouse's bedroom one morning before school, but whatever. So Bart runs out, says he'll see him at school, reminds him very out of character to not be late. And Milhouse is kind of upset because Bart, his best friend, didn't bother to wish him a happy birthday. But he heads off to school. And we see his mom doesn't wish him a happy birthday either. She wishes him a happy let your kid walk himself to school day. It's very depressing to be Milhouse.
Yes.
He gets to school and comes across the bullies, Nelson and Dolph, and he starts getting himself prepared for his morning lunch money mugging. And they say, "We don't want your crummy money. Get out of here." Milhouse is all excited. It's a birthday miracle. He finally gets to eat for the first time in years. And he encounters Lisa in the hallway, who tells him he's looking very handsome. And he attributes it to him skipping his morning beating. Oh. Then he gets all excited. That's funny
because I call all my meetings beatings, so.
He's all excited, and then we see Bart, we see Bart bribing the bullies also as Milhouse was making his way into the school. And at this point we see Bart bribing Lisa with a limited edition Malibu Stacy world leader doll, who she knows she shouldn't take, but she's just so beautiful and powerful. Then after school, we see Milhouse. He's all in his glory and the confidence that he's, having such a great birthday. He's going to do, he thinks he can do anything, even a 900 tail grab on his skateboard. So he takes off and, in general Milhouse style, ends up flat on his face. But yet everybody's still clapping. And at that point, he catches Bart bribing all the kids in the schoolyard, and he's like, I ask, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, nothing," and realizes he's been bribing people all day. And he seems like he's getting angry, but it turns out that this is the nicest thing that anyone's ever done. And Bart finally says, "Happy birthday."
Aww.
So Milhouse gets to have the best birthday ever, thanks to his buddy bribing all their schoolmates.
And now I have to point out it's actually three pages. So that whole four or five argument was kind of moot.
Yes. <So. laughs> I liked this one. It was cute. Yep. It's a short. It's definitely good to see Milhouse get his day.
Yeah. I mean, I could picture Bart doing this, but in a show story, it would be after 20 minutes of him realizing Milhouse needs help. He wouldn't start the whole day like that. But I mean, it's not totally out of character for Bart. He would do that every once in a while.
So. Yeah, this could definitely be like a B storyline.
Yeah.
In one of the episodes,
And it would somehow turn around and bite Bart in the butt. Like, he'd have to end up bribing everybody along the way. And even Homer and Marge, and he'd end up broke.
Yeah, I got you.
I when I was reading this, I thought to myself, where is Bart getting all this money? And then I remembered that any time Bart tells his dad he needs money, he just opens his wallet that's flush with cash at all times.
Yes. Yes, they don't have enough money to get a bigger, better house, but Homer has an endless supply in his wallet.
Or an air conditioning unit. Or
yes.
Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah, it's a fun little story. I mean, you know, Bart's still being mischievous, but, you know, he's doing it for the right reasons. And you see that every now and again with him, you know, where he's just trying to help out.
Yeah, well, this does lead to the next big story. But before we get to it, I wanted to talk about the middle insert because it kind of interrupts the story. The Thrill House sticker. Talk about an image I'd be on the side of the van.
Oh, yeah.
This is... I don't know what kind of artwork you'd call that. It's
like Rat Fink.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yep. It's him popping a wheelie on his bike that has training wheels on it with flame shooting out the back. And he's got an ice cream cone in his hand. And it says Thrill House. And I thought it said on the cover, it comes with a sticker, but I didn't expect it to be a full page sticker. So I was planning to put it somewhere, maybe my laptop, when I thought it was a small little sticker. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with this.
Yeah, that was my thought too. That was my thought too. It's like, where the hell are you going to stick this thing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you know, like, and it's like a big, heavy paper too. You know, so
yeah, it's like an almost vinyl sticker, if not vinyl. It might be. I'm gonna put it on the back of my car, see how long it lasts. What the hell? Why not? But I did want to mention the sticker. I did want to mention the sticker because it was not what I expected when I saw the sticker was in there. So
yeah, anyway. A lot of the books in this series come with like really random things inside of them.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
We'll go through those once we hit those books.
Yep. Well, since the, what is that called? Since Milhouse's best day was only 3 pages, as we discovered, that means the next page is the main story. So we'll turn that over to Derek.
Yes. So the next story in this book is Milhouse Van Houten is Octoweenie. A clear James Bond reference. And this was written by Gail Simone. We start out first thing in the morning in front of the school, and it says 12 short hours ago, which just means it's been a really long day by the end of this issue. Otto's letting everybody off the bus, warning them not to do anything he would and or wouldn't do. So I guess they're just going to stand around for a while. Because I don't think there's anything that Otto wouldn't do.
Yeah.
Milhouse meets up with Sherry and Terry and tries to ask them to the Sadie Hawkins Jr. dance. And they taunt him and have to explain that, no, the girls are supposed to ask the boys and nobody would ask of giant mega nerd. So he's feeling pretty rejected. Nelson walks up and slugs him and says, that's for trying to rise above your social position. Calls him a Dorcas. And that's one of the things I always really liked about Nelson when he would punch somebody is it wouldn't just be like, I'm punching you because I'm a bully. It'd be, I'm punching you for some really specifically random reason. Yeah. You know?
It's so, usually like way more intelligent than his character usually is
than portrayed. They lead him to be. Yeah. Yep. So Nelson decides that they need to take him to the swirly salon, and Milhouse says that he's swirly intolerant. So in a fit of having a heart, Nelson says, well, it is cold and flu season, so maybe we shouldn't. So instead, they just stuff him in a locker. Right. It says 7 hours later, and poor Milhouse still in the locker. Says that he has to go to the, and then it just says, never mind. So now he's been in his locker for 7 hours. Oddly, we switch over to an underground lair, something straight out of a James Bond movie. And we have Sherry and Terry rocking some 60s spy girl outfits. When Milhouse comes walking in from the back of the locker. And if you look in that little door, you can actually see it's the back of the locker, which I thought was a really nice touch.
Yeah.
He comes out in his tuxedo, which is still shorts, but a tuxedo nonetheless.
I didn't even notice. You're right.
They tell him that Agent M needs to see him. And he says he's happy to go meet with him, but first he needs a diet grape soda shaken, not stirred. That's when we get to the poster for Milhouse Van Houten is Octoweenie. It's a very James Bondy style poster where the Duff blimp is exploding. Milhouse is being chased by a flying car and he has a flying beanie on his head. Krabappel's in the background with two rulers looking like she's going to start a fight. Homer's being overrun by a barbecue,
yeah.
Which is just a great little picture. And then Milhouse has a soggy sandwich and is being attacked by ninjas.
I might actually like this as a poster for my wall more than the back cover now I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I really like this one too. This would be a great poster.
The Duff blimp exploding is like, I think, the piece mm-hmm. of the resistance for me.
Yeah. So Milhouse goes down to meet with Agent M, who turns out to be Martin in a very 70s style suit.
Yeah.
He opens up his grape soda and it explodes all over him because that's what happens when you shake up a grape soda. And Terry or Sherry are helping him clean off. And Agent M is explaining to him that all the bullies and all the dunderheads in school are getting straight A's this semester, and that's just impossible. So they're looking at a board, and it's got science, math, and gym, and it's got Bart, Dolph, and Nelson, and they all have straight A's. So Martin believes that there's something nefarious going on. Milhouse agrees, saying that last year I saw Bart turn in a sack of moldy gym socks as a science project. So there's no way he's getting an A. Martin wants to figure out what's going on because he's afraid it's going to wreck the grading curve. They discover that the person in charge of all this is on a tiny little island in the middle of Lake Springfield. So Milhouse is going to have to get there. And they take him over to meet Agent R, who is Ralph, who has designed what looks like Lisa's bicycle with a snorkel so that he could ride the bicycle through the lake and get over to the island in one piece.
I can't begin to express how happy I am to see Ralph as this parody character in this story.
Oh, yeah.
It's
kind of the perfect role for him.
Yep.
And he points out that the snorkel is where the air goes to play.
Yes.
So Milhouse starts making his way over, riding the bicycle under the water, passes Blinky, you know, gotta have a reference to Blinky, and gets onto the island, takes off his fancy swim trunks and is back in his little tuxedo and says, "It's time for the Quantum of Milhouse." Now, as somebody who has been reading comic books for years, I have to tell you, one of my favorite things in the old Marvel books is when they would put the little editor notes in there.
Yes.
And there's a little editor note right under this that says, "I don't know what it means either."
Yeah.
And that little fourth wall break always makes me laugh.
Yeah, that's good. Yep.
So Milhouse sneaks up to the hideout and sees a shadowy figure talking to Kearney and Nelson about his plan to hack all the grades in the districts of all the different schools and get all of the lunch money. And then they would be, you know, kings of the world at that point. Milhouse is figuring out his plan when he gets stopped by Dolph. Dolph's about to bring him in when Milhouse pulls out his fancy 12-sided die and manages to trip Dolph, referring to himself as the international super spy and sometimes dungeon master. So they finally capture Milhouse. They bring him inside, and the shadowy figure is revealed to be Database, who is of course stroking a cat.
Yes.
very much like a James Bond villain.
Yeah reference and casting, for lack of a better word. I mean, yeah, because he's like, we barely know him. We know he's one of the really smart characters in the Simpsons world, and that's right. You have to have a
leader of the super friends.
Yeah exactly. James Bond's adversaries are always very smart, so perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I thought it was a little odd that Milhouse had no idea who Database was.
Right.
But they lead him inside where he explains, like every good James Bond villain, he explains in detail what his plan is. And it's basically to hack into every elementary school and get their grades and change the grades for the bullies and get all of the lunch money for doing so.
Yeah.
They're about to take Milhouse away when he says, I have one last request. He goes, I'd really like to have another grape soda before I go. And then he begins to shake it up. And I love that box where he's just shaking it up and he's got this little suave look on his face. Yep. He cracks open the soda, sprays it all over the equipment and the cat. And database decides, you know what? He's being such a pain. And now I've got a cat, you know, scratching out my head because he's soaking wet. Let's take him to the Wheel of Pain. So they strapped him to the Wheel of Pain, which is basically this giant spinning wheel with a bunch of different things on it. The things on the spinning wheel are non-dairy creamer, lawn darts, falling icicles, scimitars, fire ants, or sharks. And whichever one he lands on, that's how he's going to die.
Lawn darts. I gotta love that.
I like the fact that they reference his dairy intolerance with the non-dairy creamer.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you know, he's panicking. He's screaming, no, no, no. And we flash back to the elementary school. Willie is cleaning gum off of the lockers when all of a sudden he hears, no, 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 coming from one of the lockers. He opens it up and Milhouse comes tumbling out. And so does his My Little Pony. I'm just noticing now. When you know, Milhouse is coming too, and you can see inside his locker, he has a the ship from Star Trek taped to his locker. He hops up and he goes, I'm back at school, but it was so real. Did it really happen? Did I just dream of being cool? And Willie just looks at him and goes, no, totally a dream. And Milhouse goes, I know. And then at the very bottom, it says Agent 00 will return in Never Don't Ever Say Never Ever Again. So this one's a lot like the first one in that it's just Milhouse using his imagination. You know, he's got several hours to spend in his locker. He clearly was in there upside down by the way he fell out. So, you know, he probably had a lot of blood rushing to his head and probably passed out. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun, you know, a fun little adventure for him. I liked how suave he was through the whole thing, even when they were still picking on him. But yeah, I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I really like this too. In fact, I think if you take out the dream ending and cut like right into his locker, and he kind of, if you just tweak that a little bit and had him kind of wait till everyone walked away and opened the secret hatch, you have the makings of a Treehouse of Horrors parody. Like, this is, we're talking the later years where there's like no real horror in some of the Treehouse of Horrors stuff. Like, this could be one of those Elseworld things, like a Milhouse centric Treehouse of Horrors story where he's actually a super spy and there's all these things going on, you know, under the noses of all the parents and the whole school. I mean, I kind of actually read through it like that. I was like, oh, this is like a kind of a one-off Elsewhere's. It'll never really happens, but they're telling the story Treehouse of Horror style. So I really liked it too. There's a great mix actually of Simpsons, the character casting, great mix of Bond references, and then make them adaptable to the character, like the grape soda, the 20-sided dice, the things like that. I liked it. The only thing that was, I think I would have added, if even the panels allowed it, I don't know what kind of constraints they're under, is that if they would have tied him to a laser and he somehow used his glasses to refract the laser and escaped, because his glasses
could
have fit in there as a great pun. But I mean, that would, that's just a, not even a quibble. That's just what, if I had a chance to add something to this, not even if I were writing this story, if I had a chance to add something to it, that's what I would add. But otherwise, I really enjoyed this one as well.
Yeah. And after reading that first story, I'd really love to see what Milhouse would do as a dungeon master.
Yeah, right.
Gary? Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it too. It was a lot of fun. Again, you get another glimpse of Milhouse and his imagination, which now makes me kind of want them to do a actual episode with him and his imagination, which I think would be fun to animate some of this stuff instead of rather than just in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to see that too. They did. They've done odd episodes here and there, so why not? But
yeah.
What are we up to next? Oh, okay, we're up to the short stories, which I'm not even going to count the pages because apparently I can't count. I'll leave those in Karen's capable hands because she's going to cover these last two really short stories.
Yeah. The next one is one page, and it's just Manners with Milhouse. Telephone etiquette. And it's real quick. It's just Bart and Milhouse is explaining how to be, you know, polite and friendly on the phone. So Bart is placing a call. His name is, hello, my name is Stuart Pidmey. But you could call him Stu. And we see that he's calling Mo. So this is obviously one of his crank calls to Mo. And he is looking for Miss Suring, first name Anne. So Milhouse is explaining that you need to be concise. Bart is concise in who he's looking for. Mo, unbeknownst to him, starts looking for Anne Suring, who, you know, he has a call here for Anne Suring from a Stu Pidmey. And he doesn't get it. He says, does anyone know Stu Pidmey? Of course, Barney right there gets it immediately. Tells him, yeah, I know you. Mo gets that it's finally a joke. He starts getting angry. And Milhouse tells him, oh, if you have misdialed, you need to apologize. So Bart apologizes. Sorry, it's the wrong number. And Mo takes it as it's the nicest crank call he's ever had.
I'm ashamed to admit how long it took me to read this one page because I could not get the flow of the joke names.
The names?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard when you have to phonetically put them together on page, especially in tiny little bubbles.
Yeah, yep. So this is mainly, I guess what it comes down to, this is a Mo telephone joke just wrapped around a Milhouse opening and closing.
Yeah.
And not the best one.
No, it's not.
Because we know the best one is, I'm a big, ugly jerk that
has a huge ass.
Big, huge butt, and I like to sniff my own butt.
So. I'm huge ass.
So that's all I have to say about this one, if you're ready to go on to the next.
Yeah, there's not much to say about that one. It's not that exciting. But the next one is Milhouse and Feats of Fury.
Yes. F-E-E-T-S.
Yes. They're getting back to his imagination. He is confronted by the bullies, Jimbo, Dolphin, Kearney. They want to get his lunch money as usual. And immediately Milhouse goes into dream mode. And in his dream, he is a master of kung fu dude. So he's takes off in his kung fu. He immediately goes after Kearney and reaches in and rips out his heart.
Yes, he does.
Like, it's very graphic for Milhouse.
It does, yes.
And Kearney even yells, that's no fair. And that's what you get for messing with Milhouse Van Dam Houten. I love that he calls himself that.
That was pretty, That's the laugh. That's it.
Yeah. He pops out of his dream state and realizes that they've taken his money and his pants. And there he is in front of the whole group, Sherry and Terry Nelson in his heart covered. They're not even boxers. Those are tighty whities. And there's a little note pointing out his butt.
But. This one's, this was a little odd.
Yeah. I mean, this one was better than the last short, but he was very, I don't even know, very anti-Milhouse. But, he may have a lot of pent-up aggression towards these bullies. Yep. That could be where that's coming from.
I will say my favorite part of this are the words that aren't in word bubbles. Like when it goes to kick Jimbo, it says kicko. And he reaches into Kirby. It's Kaplerpo. He pulls out the heart. The heart says beat, beat. And then when Kirby's standing there with that giant hole in his chest, there's words around it. It says gush, leak, ooze.
Yeah. And he squishes the heart. He says squisho.
Squisho, yep. Yep. Who the hell?
I like the little arrow with butt.
Butt, yeah.
Pointing to his butt.
Who the, in the last panel, who are those two?
The two kids in the background?
Yeah. They're frightening.
Do you remember like the early episodes where Nelson had like two cronies that walked the bullies?
Yeah.
Maybe they're like knockoffs of those, but they look like they're 40-year-old kids.
Well, it's like that unibrow baby grown up because the kid's got a unibrow.
Yeah.
It's his older brother. It's a family trait.
That's it.
Oh, man. So, yeah, obviously, I got some laughs out of it. Talking about it with people is better than reading that particular one. Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah.
I like that in the top frame, they have him dressed up as Michelangelo.
I didn't mean to mention that, but it's like once I saw these words around like gush, leak, ooze, and I kind of forgot about that.
Twirl, twirl.
What's that?
Twirl, twirl.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yeah. I gotta check out this guy's other work because it might do the same thing with all his stuff.
Dean Racine has done a lot of variant books, like for other comics, like a lot of Marvel stuff, a bunch of other stuff where it's basically the same kind of animation.
Yes,
but with like characters that I don't know if he has any books on his own, but I do know that he's done a lot of different variants. And they're all really weird.
I definitely recognize the artwork. I've having seen it before. I can't tell you where, but absolutely. Particularly Jimbo in the third panel with the little arms, like that is. I've seen an image much like that somewhere before. But I don't know
Milhouse where he rips out the heart. That middle panel, he kind of looks like Beavis.
He does. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So that leads into the last two pages, which I didn't read either. Are these written like Milhouse, the answers, the letters?
I don't believe the letters are. There's another stamp. It's Biclops.
Yeah, I saw that.
You might remember from Milhouse and Bart running the comic book shop. I don't think the letters were written as Milhouse, but there is on the very last page the... I'm proud to be an official member of the Milhouse fan club.
Yes.
And then if you read it upside down, it says, I fill your name in here, hereby swear to uphold the standard of excellence that the world at large has come to expect from our beloved Mr. Van Houten. I shall bear witness to his pure awesomeness in all caps and strive to follow his example. And then there's a little asterisk and it says, this agreement is non-binding in Canada and the Dominican Republic. And the president of this club is Nana Van Houten. So you could cut that little card out and you put it in your wallet. And I guess you get it stamped every time the bullies beat you up or something. Yeah.
Karen sounded a little disappointed that she has a digital copy and not the card. Oh, well, I'll send you mine. Like I said, it's worthless. No holding. Since holding on to it. All right, where are my notes for my rating? Although I know what my rating is, but what did I say about it, if anything? Because we know Matt can't not just give a number and not talk. That's impossible. Actually, I don't have that much to say. I gave this a 3.5 out of 5. I like this better than the Ralph one. I think it started off stronger, and the Octoweenie, when I picture it as a, like I said, like a Treehouse of Horror style Elseworlds thing, I really enjoyed it. So I give this just a little bit more. It's hard to rate these only two into it because there's not much to compare to. But I did like this better than Ralph, so I nudged it up a little bit to 3.5 out of 5 for me.
I went with a 4 out of 5. As depressing and sad as some of these stories were, you know, how they're picking on Milhouse left and right, I really enjoyed the animation. I really enjoyed the imagination that he showed in the books. And it was a fun read. I mean, you know, like I said, aside from him just being beat up left and right, I thought they were really funny.
I would give it, gave it a 3 out of 5 again. I did like the longer stories a little better than Rouse, but the short stories kind of or just so-so. It does have an image in it that I've been looking for all over the place for my tattoo.
Oh, God, what?
Please tell me it's the back cover.
Yeah, I'm going to get my whole back done like that. No, it's Nelson punching Milhouse.
Oh, nice. Like,
I knew I had seen that image somewhere, and I don't know how I would have seen it, not having ever seen the comic, but it's exactly what I've been looking for.
But the one where he says that's for trying to rise above your social position, Dorcas? That one? Wow, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you going to get the Wham with it as well?
Maybe.
Okay.
I didn't originally think so, but I might.
All right, well, between you and Derek's averaging out to 3.5, that looks like it's a 3.5 all around, so there you go. Yeah, that will do it for the episode. That was the last story, that Feats of Fury. So thanks for joining us. Again, we'll definitely put that tattoo picture that Karen mentioned, so you can all kind of envision at least one of her tattoos, which is, I don't know where this is going. Maybe I'm just going to stop talking there. And I'll definitely put that in. There's some other ones on here as well that are going to be worth posting, and we'll put those on our social media pages. We're NeoZazz Podcast on Facebook, at NeoZazz on Twitter, and NeoZazz on Instagram. And of course, this episode and all of our other shows, along with the other Simpsons shows we've done in the past and the ones coming in the future, or in the past if you're downloading this sometime later than 2017, are at neozazz.com. All right, we will be back next month with the next release in this series, and that is with Lil Homer, number one. So until then, thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.